Hey creepers, how's it going? It is Hero, and just wanted to give you a heads up that unfortunately, due to some issues, which I'm sure you could see happening over the past few weeks, we're going to have some trouble getting F16 out to you this week. So it will be coming next week, but in its stead, we've decided to bring you the inaugural episode of what we are calling Deep Thoughts with the Deep Ones. Now, this is normally going to be a Patreon-only feed, but this is a way to let all the patrons know this is something you'll be able to find on Patreon regularly from here on out. Also, just know it's kind of a low-rent interview thing. You're going to hear background noise. You're going to hear You're going to hear stuff that normally would drive me insane to put out in a release, but we wanted to just give you kind of a natural look as to who we are behind the scenes. Now, hopefully this tides you over while you're waiting for episode 16, and patrons know that we are indeed looking out to make sure that we are getting you content that you so truly deserve. So until F16 comes out next week, please enjoy the inaugural episode of Deep Thoughts with the Deep Ones, and then let us know what you think. You know where to find us on social media. It's not that hard. So thank you very much and enjoy. And hello, patrons of Cthulhu and Friends. We wanted to get you some extra content, and we figured what better way than starting up a new segment called Deep Thoughts with the Deep Ones. Basically, this is going to be kind of a freeform, not Q&A, not interview, but just chat between me and the different hosts of Cthulhu and Friends, or whoever we decide we want to bring in for this one. And right now, what better way to kick it off than with the person who kicked off Cthulhu and Friends to begin with, Veronica Lovecraft herself.
Yo, everybody, say hello.
That's my new voice, guys.
It's really one of the best voices possible, and I'm going to be 100% honest with all of you. Just before this, we were just singing Justin Bieber's Baby together, and Veronica, I want to ask, have you ever heard of a woman by the name of Julia Nunes?
No, never.
Okay, she, YouTube musician, focuses on the ukulele, and she was doing covers for a good long while, and she covered Justin Bieber's Baby with Temptations Baby Now That I've Found You. Like, she did a mashup of those two. Like, what are your thoughts on that as a potential mashup and just mashups in general?
Okay, first of all, let me tell you something. My daughter and I are complete show choir fiends. We love everything about musical performance, and we've really been watching Glee, like, hardcore.
Glee is so good.
Winter. It's so good. It's so good. Everyone needs to get off their high horse and enjoy some mashups.
That's what. Nice. I'll continue this thought later. Continue. Yeah.
Sing the fuck along, right? So anyways, we've really been enjoying the heck out of Glee. And so mashups in general, do not have a problem with them. I think they're great. And I think that more people should do it. Music should be fun. Music is for having a good time. And for also being sad. It's for feelings in general.
Yeah, I was about to say, there's definitely many songs I can cite as personal favorites that not necessarily the happiest.
Yeah.
No, like, all right, so my thoughts on Glee are, it's not a good show.
No.
But it's a fun one.
Yeah.
You know, and they actually did certain things surprisingly well. You know, some of the mashups, some of the people were, I think horrible. Her name, Lea Michele. Lea Michele has an absolutely beautiful stage voice. So as the show choir aspect, I get it.
Is that the Rachel Berry?
Yes.
Okay.
Like, I can see her on Broadway. I could mm-hmm. see her doing Funny Girl, which was kind of her character arc throughout. But what I don't see her doing is a radio charting song.
No.
I feel like they're two different. See, you get me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. And, you know, here's an interesting thought. Well, you know, I say it's an interesting thought because I had it. That does not make it interesting. So Mercedes Jones. So she's like, she's like the Bark and Park person, right? She doesn't want to dance. She doesn't want to do any of that. She's just going to like kind of belt it out. And I'm like, yeah, there was a time and place for that. It's not 2018. That's kind of not the thing we've got going on. Then again, that show was out during the most beloved of years, the 8 years in which Barack Obama was president. but of course, that's all come to an end. But yeah, I don't know. Mercedes Jones is one of those where like, okay, spoilers. And if you give a shit about Glee spoilers, you go ahead and kick yourself in the ass because you're just that silly.
I'm going to deep dive into some spoilers in a little bit. Oh, yeah.
So Mercedes being like, yeah, I'm working on a record deal kind of a thing. I'm like, really? Okay. But like doing what though? Because we all know that there's only one Beyonce and that's really it, right?
Counterpoint, Adele.
Okay, so Adele is also one of those. She's not a Beyonce. She does not have the full package of like, no. I am a dancer. I'm an actor. I'm a songwriter. I'm, you know, a soulful, beautiful singer.
She definitely is a songwriter.
Well, I'm just, she's not the whole package. I know. You know, I really think Beyonce is like the whole package. And I love Adele. I think she's great. Lady Gaga, same thing. I think Lady Gaga is also another whole package.
Yeah.
So, you know,
I'm completely with you there.
There's just so few spaces in the top 40 stream and you can't, it doesn't go wide, you know?
Yeah, but I think there's, you know, that's part of the fantasy of what Glee was doing, especially with Mercedes, because if there was going to be a singular pop star to launch out of all of those careers,
it would have been a Santana.
Count of three. I was going to say Santana because hands down, her cover of Valerie is still one of my favorite songs that they did on that show.
Okay. Truth time. It's actually, I replaced it for my original Valerie in all of my playlists because I love it. It's really? So good. Yeah.
Oh, my God. And then when they did, you know, speaking of Adele, they did the mashup of Adele, Someone Like You and Rumor Has It.
Yeah.
And it was her and Mercedes doing dual vocals on that, bouncing back and forth.
That was
every good. Single time you hear, don't phone get me, I beg, I remember you say. I can't sing, I'm sorry, just she had my favorite vocal on that show, period. And seemed like she could be a pop since, like, she was the only one who made sense out of all those kids.
She was a 100% top 40. Top 40 star. The other person that I think was a really good, like, oh, this person absolutely could have been a standalone top 40 star is Sam. I think he has that whole package.
In a Jason Mraz kind of sense, maybe, but I don't really see him. Like, he was not the best vocalist out there for the guys. And I'm trying to think of who was my favorite.
I think the best vocalist was Kurt, but I think Kurt is a Broadway singer. Kurt,
exactly. 100%. Why can I not remember Darren Criss, his character's name?
Are you talking about Blaine?
Blaine, thank you. Blaine is someone I think could have actually done real well. Kind of teetering on both sides, which is kind of ironic because in real life he's done that. Are you familiar with Star Kid at all?
No, I'm not.
Oh. Oh.
I may have to look this up.
Your younger sister, Ariel Diaz, is glowing with excitement right now because she wants to introduce you to the wonder that is. So, Darren Criss was part of this musical theater troupe based out of a college in Michigan, I want to say. They called themselves Star Kid. They got by on doing a couple of different, like, quirky one-off musicals, one called Me and My Dick, which Darren wrote. That's all about teenagers and the battles that they have with their genitalia, essentially pulling them in different directions. So it would be a character with their genitalia represented alongside them on a leash, connected to them at all times. except for when things go real awry. Anyways, Darren Criss wrote the music for that. He also wrote the music and also performed as Harry Potter in the Harry Potter musical, or a Very Potter musical, its subsequent sequels. This is how I learned about him. And then I saw him on Glee and went, oh, sweet mother, yes. Good on you, Darren Criss. And like the troops continued on and they even made fun of it. You know, Glee pulling him away from them later on in another one of their musicals. But anyways, jumping back, Darren Criss had that for the theatrical aspect, but he's also got a band now, I believe. Oh, I'm drawing a blank. I think it's like Computer Games or something like that is the name of the band. But No, he's legitimately someone who actually, you know, granted he had the musical tie-in and the connection to that fame beforehand, but he's able to make a go of it like most of those kids.
Cord, what's his face, the guy that plays Sam, also has released his own album and all of this stuff as well. So,
oh, good for him.
It. Yeah. You know, I was just like, hey, good.
Wow. Artie, that's who I was trying to think of. Artie actually surprised me with his voice.
I agree. And I will say, I don't know. Okay. So one of the things that I think is really interesting is that, you know, if you've been in like vocal performance and things like that, one of the things that like, number one, we don't sing when we're sitting, because singing when you're sitting is hard and it takes a lot more out of you. You have to practice more. You don't get that vocal range that you want to. And yeah, sure. I get that they are 100% not actually singing when they're performing, right? It's television. But I was just like, you know what? Good for them for, you know, showing like you can be a person of, you know, any ability and still perform with, you know, amazing power, have an amazing stage presence, have an effective voice. I thought that was really good on the creators of that show. So.
Mm-hmm. Well, why don't you, like, what are some of your favorite experiences for you personally from your time with, you know, choir and vocal performances that you had grown up?
Oh my gosh. So I have been singing since I was like 3 years old. I think the most fun show that I ever did was playing Coco in Fame. That was one of the best freaking things ever. It was so fun.
Nice.
I like dancing and singing. It was a lot of fun. I've also done, what's her face? Christine in Phantom of the Opera. That was amazing.
Wow.
I think those are.
How old were you when you were doing that? When you were Christine?
16.
Like that is, Christine is the lead female performer or mm-hmm. lead female. And like, that is not a small task, especially for a 16-year-old.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. I don't know. It was just really interesting. The funny thing is that when I was in the sixth grade, you had to make this choice between whether or not you were going to go to band or choir. And I was like, oh, no, I totally don't want to be a choir nerd. That would be dumb. So I went and I played the clarinet, and I was so bad at playing the clarinet that they were like, maybe a woodwind is not for you. Let's get you on a trumpet. It's only got three things that you have to do. And I was still so bad at that like I got kicked out of band after two instruments, and they were just like, you should sing instead. And I was like, okay. And then I got into my choir class, and my teacher sang me. She's like, hey, you have perfect pitch and you're really good. And I was like, what? Oh, all right. And so from that point on, it was just kind of like, yeah, that was my thing. That's what I did.
Now, if you're listening to this, odds are you've heard a blooper or two where Veronica has let loose a song of some sort. Those genuinely don't show the quality of vocal that she has. Like, no. 100%, the woman can sing.
Yeah, I almost never sing for realsies on Cthulhu and Friends.
How often is there cause to?
Yeah, I think, almost never.
God, the closest that we would have come to having a need for you to sing during cast would have been in season 4. Am I wrong?
Mm-hmm. That's it.
And even then, it was a child sing-songy, murderous, which all improv. God, that was creepy.
Yeah, that was great. So one of the things that is, I say these things are interesting, but only because I'm living them, not because they really are. So one of the things that Sam, my glorious husband, says about me all the time is that I am a hilarious improvisational singer. So I'll take a tune from anything and I will create alternate lyrics for it. And it's, you know, where we're driving to, what we're doing, what my poop looked like, you know, whatever, you know, it just doesn't matter. But I really like to make up songs on the spot and I think it's a lot of fun. So
random challenge then to the tune of one of my least favorite pop songs to come out in the past few years. I Can't Feel My Face. Can you come up with a theme song for this show?
I don't know that song. I'm very sorry. I could not do it if I tried.
Not even the chorus?
No, I don't think I know it.
I can't feel my face when I'm with you. Mm-mm. But I love it. Wow. Okay.
But all right, yeah, I know that, but I don't know the rest of it.
Yeah, I can't feel my face when I'm with okay, let me try and think of another song for you then. You know what? Again, no. I was going to say Katy Perry Firework. That's a real tough one.
Sheesh. Oh. Katy Perry's Firework is tough. I also have to say, I am both sitting. Huh?
It's one of the few songs where she genuinely shows, like,
yeah, for sure.
Actual range. I'm not a huge fan of hers.
I'm a big Katy Perry fan, though. So,
well, okay. See, for me, like, the songs that have actually stood out for me with Katy Perry, you know, Firework, I think, is a great song. Roar has its moments with me. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. Teenage Dream, I think, is a beautiful track.
Yeah.
But, you know, for the same reason I couldn't get behind Lady Gaga for her first album, things felt very formulaic and boxed in. Like, Katy Perry represented a lot of the issues I had with pop music for some time. One of my favorite pop acts right now is Demi Lovato. Because that
She's
woman
great.
Can sing. But then you listen to her studio stuff and it's like, you sound so generic. How did this happen?
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I got off of Katy Perry for so long. I know that makes me some kind of like hipster, bullshit, snobby, whatever. I'm fine with it. But
hey, you know what? You don't have to enjoy everything.
No. And the thing is, like I said, I will admit that there are great Katy Perry tracks. I've come around on Lady Gaga and I think she is one of the best. I personally put her above Beyonce. I'm not saying that she is. I just say I personally do.
I kind of think that Beyonce might actually be a better actor than Lady Gaga. But that's just me.
What's she acting in?
Who? Beyonce?
Yeah.
She was in Dreamgirls. That was an excellent film.
She was. But that was such a Jennifer Hudson vehicle that, like,
see, I don't
even
like
think of anything else.
Jennifer Hudson.
Really?
Yeah. She's like, I don't know. She's one of those park and barks. And I'm kind of like, all right. I mean, yeah, you can sing, but that's not what a top 40 hit is, you know?
Yeah, but as much as I hate admitting that I know this because I cannot stand Iggy Azalea, she had a song with Iggy Azalea called Trouble. Mm-hmm. Where that represents, it's like, okay, yeah, it isn't just, what was her song in Showgirls? Or not Showgirls, very different movie,
Dreamgirls.
What was the big song in that one? But like, that's the song from Dreamgirls is what I've kind of expected from her, was that, like you said, Park and Bark. But then she does Trouble with Iggy Azalea, and it's like, this is fun. This is, you know, upbeat, and it's like, give me some more of this. And then seeing her on Carpool Karaoke with James Corden, I'm like, I cannot deny how much I'm a fan of yours. And I think jumping back a little bit further, you had mentioned how there's only a certain amount of spots in the top 40 charts. Absolutely. That doesn't mean that there isn't room for other people, because you know, Liz Phair, absolutely adore her, she's not a Billboard chart topper by any stretch of the imagination, too, right? So,
And I mean, and by that same token, I probably wouldn't say that she's like a Gaga or a Beyonce or, you know, anyone like that. So.
So.
A Bieber.
Oh, God, Bieber. That last album made me so angry because it's so good.
My daughter, so my daughter's 9, right? So she's like in that prime age of like, oh yeah, we were walking into someplace yesterday and she's like, you guys know, talking to my son and I, that like, I'm the music person in this family, right? Like I know all the songs. And I was just like, yes. Okay.
Good on her.
So it was so funny, but she does not like Justin Bieber to her friends, but like any song that comes on, she's like, she knows every word, she enjoys it, all this stuff. But like, she's like, my friends and I, we're not really into him because like he smokes and because he has tattoos. And I'm like, all right, cool, whatever. So it's weird.
Now, I can relate to that because I remember when Hanson was a thing.
Oh, I loved them.
I wanted to hate them so much because I was a teenage boy. And I liked the Nirvana. And how could I like the Nirvana when the or how could I like the Hanson when I like the Nirvana?
They both had long hair.
Like, only parallels. But no, there's... It took me a while, which is shocking to say given my musical upbringing, but it took me a while to admit that it's okay to like what you like. And yes. Now my immediate response anytime anyone asks what I listen to is, I listen to good music. Mm-hmm. Oh, what's that mean? It means I think the music is good and therefore I listen to it.
Yeah, we had we've got a Sonos system in my office, and so my employees and I have access to it, and we just kind of put on whatever. And one of the guys had on Less Than Jake today. And I was like, who's listening to Less Than Jake? Because everyone here is 20 years old. And he's like, that's me, ma'am. And he's like, do you know about this band? And I was like, fuck you. Get the hell out of my office. It was so bad. And I was so crazy. Then he did a Five Iron Frenzy and some Real Big Fish. And I was like, okay, why are you listening to ska music? And he's like, oh, I really like it. It's really cool. Have you heard of this? And I was like, yeah, because you're taking me back to my middle school days. Get the fuck out. It was so crazy.
Did he not put on Save Ferris?
No, and I wasn't there for the whole time. So, I mean, it could be that it played later, but yeah.
Because, man, they became my favorite ska band. And what's ironic, given my statement earlier, is one of the reasons they were my favorite is because the second album that came out of theirs was very much so not ska.
Yeah.
They were one of those bands where I'm like, awesome, you're evolving. And I give so much credit to that because there's like some of my favorite bands are the ones who actually show an evolution through their career, which is also ironic because U2 is one of my least favorite bands because Joshua Tree was so good and everything since has been.
Yeah. My favorite evolving band like that is a band called Reliant K.
oh, damn. Not the one I would think of. Nice.
No, I loved them. When I was super Christian, they were, you know, like a Christian little band. And it really was really interesting. The lead singer and I kind of grew up together, kind of got into our first serious relationships, had fallout, got married, got divorced, like all of these things, like in the same track. So it really kind of mirrored my own personal experience, which was like, it was just such a, I guess, I don't know, deeply close connection that I had with him. It was really good.
God, that's awesome.
Yeah. So it was really cool. And I liked, you know, I really got all of the songs. It was really interesting in a previous relationship when I was like, oh man, I really identify with this music because it's kind of like how I feel. Da, da, da. And my ex was like, yeah, I don't really get it. And I was kind of like, wow, we really are over. So it was really funny because I was just like, yeah, if you're not with me on this page, I don't really know where we are.
Well, so. I think kind of summing up a lot of where we've gone with this is one of the beautiful things about music is how connective it can be. How like doesn't matter what the genre is, it's all a means of creating some form of emotion or connection. And it's awesome to me that you actually had an artist that you could follow through your life that was kind of matching alongside of you, because I had individual songs that mm-hmm. have been like, that was so me at that time. And I think back to it and it's like, yeah, I mean, it was, because I was angsty or I was super crazy or I was apathetic or whatever. Like, you know, one of my favorite references for that is Mary Bourne's Stay. It was Cole at the time, which was used in Chasing Amy. And I was an angsty teenager who had a lot of self-worth issues as it pertained to a relationship. And when that relationship fell through, it helped me start or convince myself that I was actually worthwhile for that relationship. And it helped me deal with the fact that I wasn't ready for it ultimately, for the way it had been built up. Like, that movie hit me in so many different ways, and yet it was still that one song that always just centered me. It pulled me down and got me thinking about it. So I'm not going to lie, I'm jealous that you had somebody who you could just be like, I wonder how I'm feeling right now, and just turn on latest track and go.
Yeah, it was great. So if you ever want to know my life story, listen to the discography of Reliant K, because there it is. So, but oh. I'm also a really big fan of listening to albums front to back. I think it's a lost art.
Yeah.
I didn't find an album that was really like that. I think the last one that I really loved was by Fall Out Boy. I write Sins Not Tragedies.
Oh, okay. So a while back. Yeah.
So a while back, that was my last album. And I mean, there was, you know, alongside the rest of that, you know, music that I really liked, the Black Parade and all of that kind of stuff that came out, My Chemical Romance. I was really into those albums. I thought they were really great front to back albums that you could just listen to all the way through. And I didn't really hear another album that I was like, oh man, somebody really put thought into why track 3 goes into track 4 and, you know, things like that, until I got Beyoncé's Lemonade. And I was like, this is the most thoughtful, you know, presentation of an album that I have possibly listened to in the last maybe 7 or 8 years. So, yeah.
I know. Yeah. So I know I was kind of hating on Beyoncé a little bit earlier. Lemonade is the album that made me go, she is an undeniable force now.
Oh, for sure. I think that was probably her best album of all time. I don't know that she'll ever be able to make another album like that. There certainly wasn't one before that that I think was even remotely close. She had really great singles.
Yes.
And I thought that those were great. And she had albums with tons of singles on them, but it wasn't the album that I was looking for. And that was the first time for her that I had heard an album like that. And, you know, even though I was a big fan of Lady Gaga's, I don't think Lady Gaga had that. I don't think Adele had that.
Would argue that 21 follows a great flow.
It just didn't connect with me.
That's fair.
Can just be.
The problem is that people – my belief is that the concept album became a thing. Mm-hmm. And the concept album was people telling stories throughout that. But it was this abstract, weird thing that didn't really connect with a mass audience. So there wasn't a perceived studio value for the concept album or telling a story throughout. Meanwhile – bands like the Beatles, the Rolling Stones, these people have been doing – Dylan, any number of people, Joplin, Hendrix, they've all made essentially what is a concept album just because of the flow of, like you said, why this for track 3 instead of track 6.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that artistry definitely is gone. And I think we also live in an era of singles.
Yeah. But I think that there is a resurgence coming back. I mean, I think that, you know, with the days of Napster, we really got into a singles mindset. And that was all that, you know, because that's what the consumer wanted, then we knew going forward, like, okay, well, you can have a 12 to 15 track album, but only six of those need to be good. You can put garbage on that and then we'll save the next six for your next album, blah, blah, blah. But now I think with, you know, the advent of Spotify and iTunes Music and, you know, Google Play, people have the ability to just listen to full albums and they're just paying that subscription cost. It's not like you're having to buy each individual track. You're not having to go and download it from some torrent that's probably going to tear apart your computer, you know, like just all sorts of like things like that. There's not really any risk in trying an album, whereas, you know, dating back to the 50s, there was still like a risk to trying an album because, you know, you bought the album, like, okay, you didn't like it. Who cares? Yeah. So you're not going to get your money back on that. So.
Yeah, I think the digital aspect of it, I actually just listened to this podcast with Steven Tyler, who was talking about his issues with Spotify and how they aren't issues with him personally. It's that he feels the artist is getting severely underpaid. So these up-and-comers who are going with Spotify, it's like, what exactly are you giving us other than exposure? But then how are we supposed to make our money outside of that exposure? You know, I don't know. It's a weird system that we live in. And Napster definitely played a massive role into this because music is one of those things where, like, you've got people screaming in your ear left, right, and center. You watched this movie without paying. This is theft. And you're going to crash a car and go to jail because you're a bad human. You know, like you see it every single DVD. Sorry, Blu-ray. I guess I'm that old. That comes out. Music, you don't really get that outside of artists mentioning it every now and again.
Yeah, and I think that comes from a culture of shows being inaccessible for a lot of people. So, you know, anyone can go to the movies in their town, you know, and that's not a big deal. But, you know, a lot of times you'll have people that live in a small town that have never seen a live performance. And whether that's, you know, even if it's like a one act play or, you know, a student production or something like that, they've never seen live performance and they don't understand the value of what it takes to put on one of those performances. And so I think that, you know, artists that go out and they, you know, go on tour and then they only stop in like huge cities do themselves a great disservice, where I think, you know, if you had Rihanna, instead of trying to do all of these stadium tours, you know, I think like, I want to say like a handful of years, she went out and did like the arena tours and couldn't sell them out. And I think had the industry been more like, hey, no one really gives a shit about going and seeing this huge mega pyro show anymore. People are really interested in seeing, you know, down to earth acoustic versions of your songs and having an intimate experience with you, like going and hitting small venues in smaller towns and giving people access to what a live performance is and why it's so important. I think that's where music is totally lost right now, and that we don't value that, but we value movies because, like, oh, well, we can go see those anytime. But then again, I mean, movies are freaking on the screen for what, 3-4 weeks max, and then they're gone. And I mean, that's like the Avengers, you know?
Yeah, I think like even Black Panther was in the top five grossing films for maybe only 4 weeks. It was in theaters for maybe six. And you think about the cultural importance of that movie in this time for, you know, another podcast I listen to called Double Toasted. Well, Double Toasted is a network. They have a whole bunch of different podcasts hosted primarily by African-American males. Black males, I think, is what they would prefer. I'm not sure what they would say. Either way, based in Austin, Texas, awesome human beings. They were continually talking about how crazy it was that Corey, the main guy behind it, was bringing his mother to see this, and she never wants to go see movies with him. He's a professional movie critic for a living, and his mom doesn't want to go see that. But Oh, yeah, no. Why don't we have another date? Why don't you come over to Waco? Come pick me up. Let's go see Black Panther again. You know, like, that is how That's important cool. that movie was. And I think,
yeah,
you know, the fact that it had that relevance for a little over a month is kind of like, well, Jesus. And I mean, granted, the relevance will be around long after it's out of theaters, but.
Well, I think it was really important. One of the most interesting things that, you know, I've seen, I'm a huge movie buff. I literally see a movie like at least like 3, maybe 4 times a month. So I'm out all the time seeing them. And if I could go and see movies more, I absolutely would. When I was in high school, my best friend and I would literally see every single movie that was on the screen, regardless of if we knew what it was about or not, every summer. And so there was not a movie that went through our town that we didn't see. And I would still do that to this day if I could, if I had time.
Yeah.
What's so funny is like, it's never a money thing for me because I'm like, no, I'll make the money. Like, it's always like, I just don't have, you know, 25 hours to spend watching movies nowadays. But I take my kids to see the movies all the time. I hope that as they grow up, they, you know, think back and be like, oh man, my mom took us to the movies all the time. It was such a great experience, blah, blah, blah. All of these things. But they see films like opening night all the time. And one of the things that I thought was so cool is that we did not go and see Black Panther opening night. And my son was like, why are we seeing Black Panther opening night? And I was like, well, actually, it's really important that we let other people see this first. It's more important for them right now. And so we went and saw opening weekend because I have a big thing about like, if you love a movie, if you are supporting an actor, whatever it is, you make sure that you get your freaking totals in before Sunday so that it can be in that box office drop. So in any event, we went opening weekend and it was awesome. I didn't talk to him about the cultural significance of anything. It was just a big deal for him. After that movie, he's like, did you notice that like there were a lot of Black kids here? And I was like, there were. And he was like, I'm just like really excited for them because like they got to see what it's like to be like, you know, on the screen all the time. And I was like, yeah, that was really cool. And he's friggin' 10 years old and he got it, you know?
Yeah.
And he was just like, that was one of the best movies I've ever seen. And I was, it was really good. You know, it was, yeah, it, just mean, interesting.
I'll say it. I saw a few CG issues in there, you know, that were a little I loved it. I genuinely thought it was a great movie. I thought great for the time it's coming out. And if nothing else, great to be able to open up a dialogue and have a discussion about representation in a way that's like the excuse that was given for so many years is, well, we just don't think you're marketable enough.
Yeah. You're not going to sell tickets. It's a thing.
Flip y'all off. It's now the highest grossing. Like Avengers is going to take it down, but they also had 10 years building up to this point.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's also coming out right after Black Panther.
Black Panther was in it.
Did you notice the marketing shift that happened after Black Panther came out?
I didn't. So one of the things that's real weird about me is that I don't watch movie previews or things like that. So I will, you know, if it's something that I really don't know about, I'll watch like, you know, a really quick, like maybe 45-second preview. Okay. But that's about it.
Well, just to give you a quick sum up, the trailers, the teasers, everything play out exactly as you think Civil War, or not Civil War, Infinity War would play out. Here's all the different players. Here's everything that's going on. Then after Black Panther comes out, you're like, this seems to be doing all right. Now all of a sudden they have a trailer, like teaser, commercial, whatever you want to call it, that takes place primarily in Wakanda. The soundtrack for it was primarily YK, not the Dora Milaje. I think it was M'Baku's tribe, or maybe it was just everyone chanting.
Oh.
It was them chanting, and it focused on Black Panther more. And it's like Infinity War. Very calculated, like cool though it may be, it was a very calculated marketing move at the time, which smart one to make. I don't blame them for it. But it's great to see that, you know, no longer do you have that excuse to hide behind.
Yeah, no, 100%. Yeah. And I think that one of the interesting things about Black Panther for me was that I was not sold on that whole film until, oh my gosh, what's his name? Michael B. Jordan. Until he goes and is just like, he asserts his power and freaking now he's the king. That's when I was like, oh shit. This movie is legit. It is real. It's so good. But like up until that point, I'm like sitting there in the theater thinking to myself, like, am I like going to be the only person that's not really like into this film? This is okay.
it was an origin story up to that point. And yeah. You had very simplistic characters. Like, even though Shuri's one of my favorite characters coming out of that, the reason she is because she put on gauntlets and went into the fight. She wasn't just, you know, the Q of Wakanda. You know, she had a willingness to step up and do more than just be like, I'm the tech person who does the tech things. Let me tech for you. You know, but I think that was the turning point. When Killmonger takes over, that's where you see characters flesh out. Before then, it was just get to know him.
Yeah. It was such a good, I think, like, plot device to really make you care about what happens. I don't know, just the entire thing was very masterfully done. And I think that it was really interesting that, I mean, purposefully, they got you to let down your guard and question, like, okay, you know, is this it? And then really hit you hard. And I think that was really smart. It was a good second act. Mm-hmm. And the second act is usually where you get a little, oh, I'm kind of tired. So.
It's kind of becoming that way with a lot of superhero movies. I know what was it? I Am Number 4 came out and my roommate wanted to see it. And I remember partway through, I was just like, screw this. I have no interest. So I walk out of the theater, go to the bathroom, go outside, have a cigarette. Meet Jerome McGinley, who was playing for the Calgary Flames at the time, who mocks me for not being in the theater for my movie. then go back in. My roommate's just like, you want to know what you missed? And I looked over and I'm like, Timothy Oliphant inspired him. They have to leave. And he does this. He does it. He's like, wait, how'd you know? And I'm like, because that's how generic this movie is. Yeah.
Like, it's unfortunate. It's unfortunate.
But there's only so many different ways that you can tell a story. What I care about is if you have the passion to do it well. That movie didn't.
Yeah. And that's one of the interesting things. I tell my daughter all the time, I don't fast forward through credits, especially in older movies where credits come first. You know, we were watching The Sound of Music together and she's like, can you fast forward past the credits? And I was like, someone put this together for you. Mm-hmm. For you to watch, for you to be entertained. We do not fast forward through someone else's work. That is rude. And she's like, all right, calm down. But it's interesting because I've forgotten where I was going with this. But for Eden specifically, it's one of those things where it's very important for me to be able to see, like, oh, we're talking about passion. Sorry. It's really interesting for me to see, like, okay, well, someone did this on purpose to evoke a feeling from you. And that is the most important part of a movie, is that I have come to be entertained. How are you going to mess with my emotions in any way you want to, right? I should be in the theater feeling and experiencing that. I should never walk away feeling like, oh, you just made money off of me. Like, that's uncool. And that's not the exchange that performers and audience are supposed to have. Performers and audience are supposed to have an emotional exchange, and the customer should be happy to be like, oh, that was so, thank you for evoking that emotion for me. I'm so glad I gave you this money, blah, blah, blah. That's our societal you know, contract. That's our social norm that we're all cool with. But when you're like, hey, you should be here because you're real dumb and you don't get things and you don't realize that every romantic comedy is exactly the same anyway. I'm just going to take your money.
Full stop, crazy, stupid love, my woman, my dear woman, crazy, stupid love. I think going off that for you, for me, it doesn't necessarily have to even be a profound experience. Just have to give a shit about doing it well. You know?
You have to try.
Yeah. And with that, I know I said I didn't want to bring up CAF too much, and I don't, but I will say I do want to apologize for one thing. I discovered this as I was putting together episode 14 of Cthulhu and Friends Season 6. Mm-hmm. The AI construct that you had, I did some vocal effecting on.
Yes.
When I was putting together 13, may not have realized it was an AI. So the vocal effecting was just the same thing that everyone else was going through. I'm hoping it masked and people don't really notice too much, but yeah. That's going to be the one calf tie-in for this, and I think that's actually going to be how we end this round. Now, for those of you who have been sitting there patiently waiting for this plot to emerge as to what this show is, well, you heard it. What we want to do is kind of give you an inside look onto the people behind the show, and not as it pertains to the show. You get that in the Q&A, so you have a chance to figure that out, and this just shows you who we are, how we interact, what we do, and hopefully this was enjoyable. V, I know you asked this question at the end of every session. Did you have fun?
I did. I did think of a really good song for us.
Oh, please.
Are you ready? Okay. Deep thoughts, doop-a-da-ba-da, deep thoughts, deep-a-da-ba-da. That's all.
My roommate's going to love you because he loves him some Hanson.
That's not like real singing, but yeah.
Well, thank you very much, V. And thank you to everyone who is donating to our Patreon. That is the only way you're going to be able to hear this feed. And we will be coming at you with more as we go along.
Wow, I forgot this was for Patreon. I totally forgot we were making a recording. And
that's what all. I want. you know, I guess just a hint to inside baseball, I told you before, and I'll tell the patrons this, I essentially want this show to kind of be like the Joe Rogan experience, where it's just a conversation. This isn't an interview. This isn't for anyone other than us, and hopefully you enjoy it, and hopefully you get something out of it, and we go from
there. I mean, to be totally honest, though, with our show, I almost want you to say, like, and apparently fear is not a factor for you, though, you know?
Yeah, well, it's definitely true. It's almost like, you know, news in a radio format of some sort.
Man, I'm going to go and listen to the Joe Rogan Experience because I don't think that I have listened to that in a good 2 years.
So. There's some really good ones that have come out recently. Steven Tyler's is hilarious because he is as crazy as you would expect Steven Tyler to be.
Of Metallica, right? Just kidding. JK. For those of you that don't know who Steven Tyler is, he is the front man for Aerosmith. So
or was. I'm never sure how that works anymore. They kind of float in and out.
I don't know. You know, whatever. Go listen to Aerosmith Big Ones. That's a good album front to back.
Yeah. I was actually having this. All right, we're going to keep going on for ages if we don't stop this. Thank you again, patrons, and look forward to bringing you more.
Bye.